This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients.
So, Brie, I remember this one time I was in a bike race around Tucson, and I wasn't paying attention. We were riding down 4th Avenue, and there's railroad tracks, like streetcar tracks, and my bike's tire like went and wedged in to the railroad tracks,
no!
And I totally fell down and just like skinned my hands, everything. Ugh. I had nothing with me, nothing at all. And it's that times where you want a first aid product and you have nothing. And Active Skin Repair utilizes a molecule called hypochlorous acid. When applied to the skin, the molecule works by mimicking the natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. I've used it on my son's mosquito bites, and I wish I would have had it the time I totally scraped up my hands.
Oh, I hear you. Like whenever I go paddleboarding, kayaking, I'm always trying to find something that is like an all-in-one that I can take with me. And Active Skin Repair could be used like that. It can be used to treat cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, and other types of skin damage. It's also safe and non-toxic, which makes it suitable for all skin types, all parts of the body, like eczema, and acne-prone skin, all of that.
With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients so safe and clean they can be used from the youngest member of the family to the oldest, you now have one simple solution for all of your family's skin health needs. Visit www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and to get 20% off your order. Use code NOGUILT. Hey, welcome to episode 2 of the No Guilt Mom podcast. I am your host, Joanne Crone, and joined here by my lovely co-host, Brie Tucker.
Hello, hello. How y'all doing?
And we have, it's y'all today.
It's y'all. It's that lovely Midwest coming out of me there, you know.
Is that a Midwest thing or is that a Southern thing?
So the funny thing about the Midwest is unless you're from the northern portion, you're kind of southern anyways.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. And I'm actually from Missouri. And so it just depends on, like, there's, like, this invisible line in the middle of the state. Once you pass it, it's just you're southern no matter what. And then...
Because I really like to use y'all. And, like, my friend Tasha, she's in North Carolina. She used it all the time. And I asked her to deputize me as southern so I could use y'all. Because I'm like, y'all just sounds fun.
Yeah. Oh, I have a lovely mix, too, because I also have a little bit of Baltimore in me, too. Yeah. So then my T's become D's, so it's real fun. And
wonder what Arizonans have. They must have something.
No, I feel like Arizonans are very...
Even, but it's just because we live here.
I feel like I can't hear where they're from. Like, I'm always listening for their other accent because half of Arizona's transplants.
They are. Mostly from Minnesota, I've noticed. Minnesota. I even say it because my husband's from Minnesota, so I'm like, Minnesota. Minnesota. Yeah. I can't say it when I'm intentionally thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's drawn out.
A lot of Minnesota.
Anyways. Today's episode, we are interviewing Dr. Lisa Bravo. She's an internationally recognized relationship expert.
I believe it. It was very, very eye-opening.
It was great. We talked a lot about socialization in kids, especially during this pandemic, when they can't go to school.
What are we supposed to do?
And we learned a new catchphrase that we put on shirts.
Yes. Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3. Embrace the messiness.
I forgot it for a second there. I had like all the pressure. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is it?
Brie will talk loud enough for the two of us. It's okay.
It's embrace the messiness. And Dr. Bravo, she is also the author of a book coming out in early 2021 called The Bravo Effect, Strategies for Parenting Extreme Teens.
I smell a book club.
A book club.
That could be a book club in the future here for No Guilt Mom.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So with that, let's get into it. You want mom life to be easier. That is our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our own lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Okay, we are here with Dr. Lisa Bravo, and we are so happy to have you here because we have so many concerns about kids and socialization and this new way of online learning. So I am so excited to have this conversation. And let's just, you know, start it out. You're based in Phoenix, Arizona, and you help families heal from trauma and build connected relationships. So, like, what drew you to this field?
Well, I think the seed was planted very early on. I was a very cantankerous, difficult teenager, and I went through a lot of adversity and didn't really have the emotional support that I needed in order to be the best version of me. So I went on a quest of self-destruction for a good decade. Mm-hmm. And through that process, I learned through a therapist that I had that I didn't have to live that way anymore. And so in doing so, I decided I wanted to do this with my life. I had somebody who helped me change the way I looked at the world. And it helped me be, it opened a door for me that I had never really considered for myself. And so I was on a quest of my own, you know, personal healing and growth and self-discovery. Then I started having children, and I found out that parenting is a lot harder than it looks. I ran daycare centers and I ran children's programs for many years before I had kids. And I thought, oh, I've got this. It's going to be easy. And, you know, I can wrangle 25 kids. One's going to be easy. And I was quickly humbled, and I had a very big learning curve when it came to being the mom in the story. That experience taught me so much about what goes on behind the scenes for parents and how incredibly it is important it is for us as parents to take very good care of ourselves so that we can do our best work with our children.
Isn't that funny how going, because I mean, I was a teacher in an elementary school for many years, and I always thought like parenting would be a breeze because you have all the kids in the classroom and they're all working together and you have these rules and expectations. And then when you get your own, you're like, none of this works anymore.
Right? Yeah. Don't we all have that? Like, just like you, Dr. Bravo, I started in early childhood too. And my expertise was 0 to 3. And I was like, oh, I got this. Mm-hmm. I got this.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh gosh, that's why all those parents had such a hard time when I gave them like ideas on things to do, because it's a lot harder when you're trying to do it yourself.
Right. And then you find out when you have parents, a lot of the things that I used to tell parents to do was completely impractical and unreasonable. And and it had nothing to do with the parent not having the skill or trying to make it work. It had everything to do with understanding what motivates that child and how that child works. And that was a huge discovery for me.
I feel so bad for like some of the parents that I had in my classes when I was a teacher, because at that time, my daughter was probably like, she was just born. She was a newborn. And here they came to me and they're like, oh my gosh, what should we do about homework? And I'm like, well, set aside a place and they'll just do it. And I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way anymore. Mm-hmm. And you learn so much through experience and practice. And now your two kids, they're grown.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, what did they like, how have you really approach this whole experience of like your experience coming from this place of where you had, like you said, a self-destructiveness early on, and then seeing them grow up, like how has your past experience really affected how you parent them and how you, what skills you teach them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think because of what I went through, it prepared me for getting ready for all the crises and all the things I was going to have to deal with as a parent, because I put my parents through a lot. I actually really, you know, as a child, as I got older and then I could see myself as a child, I had some perspective and I was able to understand that my, you know, what I needed the most was connection and emotional support. And that superseded everything else. And so I was very, as my children grew, very interested in being that provider of that emotional support and understanding that their well-being comes before grades, comes before school, comes before friends. Their emotional connectedness to me mm-hmm. is the number one source that I can give them. So that has been sort of how I've raised them and prepared for all the trapdoors that were going to happen. And the funny part is that all the things you prepare for are never what you have to deal with. It's ironic, but it's true. Yeah. And, you know, my kids were not rebellious. They've been very, not easy. They are very difficult, are very different personalities. My son tends to be very emotionally intense and has been since he was young. So I learned a lot about motivation and connection. He was not a kid who liked school. He was very active. So we always had challenges with him from that direction. My daughter was perfectionistic and very sort of rigid and always had to do things perfectly or she wasn't going to try them. So I had one at each end of the spectrum. And so in having kids like that, I was really blessed because I was able to really learn from them. You know, I kind of saw my household as sort of the lab for me developing the techniques that I've developed and I use in my practice.
That's kind of how I see my household too. And that's the benefit of having like kids with completely different personalities is you get mm-hmm. both sides of the spectrum and like to see, oh, well, you know, everyone has that perfect first child sometimes. Sometimes it's the first child and they're like, yes, I got parenting, check. And then mm-hmm. the second one comes along and you're like, I have no idea what I just got into.
Hey, all, it is Joanne
and Bree here,
and we want to tell you about a podcast that you should check out. It's called Understood Explained. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Uturbe, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
And in this latest season of Understood Explained, it covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. We actually just listened to the episode, IEPs, Does My Child Need an IEP? And here is what we loved about it.
I loved that it was so digestible. Like, it was such a short episode. And all of the topics, which could be really confusing to parents, were easily explained.
And I loved how they gave great concrete examples because you know how much I love me a good example. They explained what kind of services and supports you could actually see on a child's IEP or individual education plan. And they explained those acronyms. That nothing drives me more crazy than when there's acronyms and I don't get it. I don't know what it stands for. They took the time to explain everything in so much detail and to cover concerns that a lot of families have about special ed services.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains, or just click on the link in our show notes. From the creators of the hit kids podcast Who Smarted and Netflix's Brainchild comes the adventurous world of mysteries about true histories, affectionately known as Math.
Every episode follows Max and Molly. I gotta say, love the name Max. That's my puppy dog's name. Who have just recruited into a secret order of problem solvers on an adventure through time packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and laughs. It actually makes learning pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, I listened to this with my son, and it was so fun to listen to. I loved how modern it was with a cool aunt that they really dug, and like they dealt with bullies. My son also enjoyed all the math involved. Like, he thought it was really cool.
Well, and I have to say, I love anything that brings learning and fun together for kids. I really, really wish that something like this was around for my teens when they were younger. We would have absolutely devoured this on our car trips. It would have been amazing. It's perfect for kids ages 6 and up, and new episodes drop every Thursday.
So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods.
Right. But I love how you talk about connection and emotional support. So now that we're in this kind of weird age of like online schooling, we have a lot of parents who are concerned about their relationship with their kiddos during this and them having to be kind of both the enforcer of teaching and the parent. So what are like some strategies that you have where that how parents can kind of maintain their relationships with their kids during this time?
Well, ironically enough, I think the number one thing that parents need to keep in mind is that it has nothing, their child's success has very little to do with what they do in school.
That's a good point.
And what they do on Zoom. The success happens way before that. I think parents, you know, the silver lining with this pandemic that I've seen in my practice is that parents and like everyone got grounded at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's how I look mm-hmm. at it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so it took away all these layers of other pieces that parents were struggling with. The good news is we all had to figure out how to live together again under one roof and bake bread together. We had to learn how to use yeah. our ovens, right? We had to learn how to, you know, make masks from bathing suit fabric, you know, and all kinds of things we never thought we'd have to do. And in learning that, the other thing that we learned is that we know how to be families again, and we know how to be connected. And and parenting is messy.
Yes.
And parents who expect it not to be messy are going to be super disappointed. So I guess the number one thing is embrace the messiness of it, because if you can just surrender to the mess, it's going to be so much easier. It's like, it's the difference between swimming against a current and swimming with a current. The other thing I think is super important that has nothing to do with your child is your own self-care.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Yeah. That is so important.
So parents are so focused on the schoolwork and getting it right and making them sit in the seat and having the stuff they need and all the doing of it. But they spend less time thinking about how they want to be in the process with their child. And if they're really conscious about being in the process with their child, then the other stuff will just fall into place. Parents who are well cared for, self-care, right? Parents who are well cared for and nurtured and full have a lot more reserves to deal with all the things that happen in the day.
Yeah. Something that I remember actually I learned from you. You taught me this, that kids are like the mirror to parents. All you need to do is look at your kids and mm-hmm. see how they're acting. And it kind of tells you, it gives you like a pinpoint about, oh, this is how I react to that situation. Or this looks familiar. I just did that last week.
Right.
Uh-huh. And it's
I'm laughing because Joanne knows this, that I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son, and my 12-year-old daughter is me. She is a mini me. And so that mirror gets thrown in my face every day. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's me right there. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
You know, the good news about that though is, you know, it makes us cringe because it's so close for us.
Yeah.
But really, if we can lean into it and go, okay, so here's my lesson for the day. I don't want to look like that when I'm not getting my way anymore, because that right. is not really
exactly.
aesthetically yeah. pleasing. So
yes, I'm exactly. That's what it comes
what
up.
I look like when I don't get my way. So mm-hmm. I'm modeling this in a different way for my child.
Yeah. And it also works the other way yeah. too. It shows you mm-hmm. what you're doing right. It showed me a lot what I'm doing right. When my kids respond to me when I'm sad, my son would be like, are you okay, mommy? And it's because that's what I do to him when he's sad. So we could look at it in both directions. We can look at it to see our strengths, and we can look at it to see maybe stuff we need to work on as well.
Well, mm-hmm. and also positive. Look at the things that you're very grateful for with your kids, right?
Very great. Like, yeah.
Man, it's really butch, your nitpick and everything, but one day you're going to be a lawyer. I know it, or something like that.
Right. And you can look at those parts. They're the parts of them that feel abrasive or difficult are usually connected to our own healing or need to heal something. And if we can take that as really important information and deal with it later on our own time, and wow, why was I so angry when he said no to me? Or, mm. or, why did I get so upset when he called me the meanest mommy in the world? Or why was I hurt that he wanted dad to take him instead of me? That has more to do with me and how I'm experiencing my own wounds than it has to do with my child. And so if I can be conscious about that and take that as important information and then understand what it means for me, then I don't have to also put that on my child later.
Mm-hmm.
True.
So that makes sense. Going off of that and going into this this concern about online schooling and socialization, I mean, myself included, I was very concerned when the school district decided to start schooling online because I was afraid, oh my gosh, my son is not going to interact with anyone. He's going to like go crazy from lack of friends. Could it be almost like, well, first, I want to know your opinion. Like, what should we be concerned about and what should we not be concerned about during this online schooling period with our kids and screens and the lack of socialization?
Well, I think before that, it's also the lack of physical activity, right? So we're here in Arizona. This is like the dead of winter for, you know, most people in the country. This is what I describe our summers are like. Their winters, like we live in a cave, we don't come out until it's not, you know, 120 degrees outside. And our kids, we're stuck inside and we get cabin fever and we're tired of being all together. So I think finding ways where we can have a lot of good physical activity and movement before we get online to start our school day is going to set us up for success. I had a mom that I talked to last week who's actually a teacher, and she gave me a brilliant idea, starting with physical exercise. But the next thing is they also need structure and routine. So setting up that school day like a school day, they get up, they do their exercise, they jump on the trampoline or go for a swim or ride their bike around the block before it gets too hot. Then they have breakfast. Then she actually has her kids packing their lunch for school.
My kids do that.
Put it in the lunchbox and then they go to the workspace for the day. And it creates this routine that's super important for kids and this structure that's important for them. And the first week they are going to push against it. You have to anticipate that. That does up. It means that that's a normal part of their learning a new routine and they're trying to instill a new habit. And so we have to also know that we have to be consistent with that habit, even more so than they are. Having a dedicated bedtime and having all of those routines back into place like they had them as if it were a real school day is really going to help support that process.
That's important. Yeah, because it's easy. It's easy just to be like, oh, like you only have to show up to school in your pajamas. You know, it doesn't really matter when you go to bed. Like it's really easy to fall into that kind of mindset. Yeah. So knowing that, you know, go back to the routine, treat it like a normal school day, have them go to bed at a certain time. Like it makes such a difference.
Packing the lunch is a great way to change the way that it transforms as well. It gives them it's a different structure.
And then they have a lunch ready that they don't need to interrupt parents who are working to like make them lunch. It's
right.
It's brilliant actually. Yes, definitely.
That's a good idea right there.
Yes. Have kids pack a lunch.
The other thing I do think we know that kids are by nature are kinetic learners and kinesthetic learners. So they learn through movement. I will say I am slightly concerned that so much of the curriculum that's rolling out has to do with sitting in front of the computer. I think that it's unreasonable for parents to expect that their kids, their kindergartners, first graders, second graders, up to fifth and sixth grade are going to be able to sit in front of a computer without having a meltdown.
Yeah, no, that was my big concern. Yeah.
I want you to expect it to be messy. Expect there to be meltdowns. Then you won't be disappointed. Then you can go, okay, we got that out of the way. Check. You know, it's very difficult to sit. So they need to have some time to wiggle around in between. You know, have a dance party. I think that's a great way to work with kids. I've been doing lots of telehealth over this time. And so I've had to really kind of expand my repertoire of keeping kids engaged. And we have, you know, I put in songs and we have a dance party for 5 minutes and we wiggle and then we sit and try again. Especially kids with neurotypical development. If you have kids on that have any kind of special needs or attention deficit disorder, it's very difficult for them to sit and learn at the same time. I know there's some, we have a ball in my office that was, it's a ball chair, and it was like the most coveted chair in my office for my kids with ADHD, because they would just sit and bounce on this ball. It may drive the teacher crazy, but that child needs that kind of input in order to be able to focus. So I think allowing them to have a way to keep themselves engaged in a kinetic way is really important.
Yeah, I like that advice, because a lot of the worries stem from kids being glued to screens. And tell me if I'm wrong here, but my advice typically has been like, it's really not the screens that are the issue. It's the inactivity that's an issue, and it's the quality of the screen time that's an issue. When we go into this online schooling, it's actually very high quality material that's being taught on these screens. And so what would you say to parents who are concerned that their kids are going to be glued to the screens?
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced, so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Well, I think the concern isn't about the schoolwork. It's about when they're done with school, then they're on the screens for six more hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? So that's kind of really the truth about what happens. So typically in a day before COVID-19, kids would go to school, they'd come home, they'd have their snack, get their homework done, then they'd be on screens until bedtime. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So now parents are the minute they wake up to the minute they go to bed. The other problem is they're also modeling the same behavior.
Mm. Just going
because
on
they're working from home. So the way the child sees it is, well, you're on your screen all day.
Right.
You're barely paying attention to me. That's how they see it. Mm-hmm. So it's super important that you have an end time, a start time, and an end time for your work day too.
That's a double right there.
I see that as a double to what you were saying, like, because that also includes your self-care. Mm-hmm. You're not burning yourself out, because at the end of the day, like you said, like if you're working all hours, answering emails at any time, text messages, whatever, you don't have anything left for your kids. So of course they get the frustrated end. So not only does that help with where was this a week ago?
And Bree, it's really important that you can try to see it through your child's viewpoint because in their mind, you're doing just what they're doing. So it doesn't make sense. You know, we finish a day of work and our treat is to surf the web or to try and get on Facebook or check our Instagram or whatever those things are that we do to decompress.
Yeah.
But what we're doing is we're teaching them, this is what we do. When we're done working, we do more. And so we really need to think about how they're internalizing those ideas and really make a conscious decision along with the verbal cue of, okay, work is over. Boom, there goes my computer. I'm putting it in my bag. And now it's our time together. What are we going to do? And then be really actively involved in some kind of activity that's physical with them, that brings joy, that builds those active memories for them. So they start to build their bandwidth around spending time means spending time together. Now that does take out the social aspect with peers, and we can talk about that in a minute, but I think just building on what you have available, your family, you're an important resource. Your kids want you more than anybody else. And that's the absolute truth.
They do. And I think that self-care for parents really goes hand in hand in that, because there are times when I will finish a whole work day and I feel like I have given myself completely to my work and to my concentrate, like all my concentration to my work. And then it gets off and I'm like, you know, I am brain dead and I feel like I have had no time to myself for the past week. And it gets you in that angry state that, oh my gosh, like, why do I need to like think of back to activities to do? And so I think it really goes back to self-care and making sure that, yes, you have work time, but you also need time to step away from your kids. And if you don't have that time to step away from your kids and really nurture yourself and nurture like what you like to do, you are not going to have that energy or feel anything like being connected in the evenings. So it's like, it goes in like this whole big jumble. And it's hard to.
Well, and you know, if you could probably speak to this, Joanne, your kids are going to get your energy one way or another.
Oh, they definitely are. They are.
Whether that's good or bad.
They're going to go for the back end.
Yeah.
They're going to get it any way they get it. So that's the thing that I think a lot of parents don't understand is, you know, if you feed them energetically and with your time and with your emotional connection before they're hungry for it, then they're fed emotionally. And then they're not picking at you. They're not grabbing at you every 5 minutes. Then they feel the sustenance of your connection. And that means that it's really conscious. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're returning emails and on the phone and every 5 minutes you're interrupted with something else. It means you're concentrated. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be for hours at a time either. If you get in the habit of just really giving to them, nobody else is in the room but them. And imagine it's like the last 10 minutes you're ever going to talk to them. You know, how would you spend that time? Like really make it intense. So you're with them. Then later they don't feel the need to compete with your phone and to compete with your computer and to compete with the remote control.
Because they have their time. They know when it's their time and they know when it's the time that you have to focus and concentrate on work.
Well, and they feel seen.
And they feel seen.
And they feel connected. Mm-hmm. And they aren't going to look for that connection in other ways.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's hard when you're in the habit of going directly to your phone after work to then immediately switch to that, you know, I'm going to stay connected with my kids. And it's almost like, I mean, I've gone through this and it's almost like a boredom thing at first. And it sounds so bad that it's like, oh my gosh, I don't have this time to spend with my kids. Really, I do. I'm just not used to fully being present and with them. And so it's like a lead up process that needs to happen in that. But it's great advice. Give them that.
Well, and you know, Joanne, I want to just piggyback onto that because I think what a lot of parents will say to me is, well, I'm tired and sometimes I'm too tired to spend time with them. And what I will say to them is, that's true. But what happens? Do they know exactly how to get you off the couch? Do they know exactly the right words or the right sibling to knock down?
Oh, they do.
The dog
Do
they know exactly the right things to get you energized in a way that you didn't know you had in you? And then when you're angry, how much energy does that take?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's true.
We get really fixated on our anger, and we're really good at lecturing and getting involved in those moments, and we don't even think about that as an expenditure of our energy.
No, we don't.
But truly it is. So if we consciously decide to spend it on the front end, it's such a better day. When you're reviewing your day and you have to go to sleep at night, you don't have as many regrets.
That is a great point. Going back to kind of kids' socialization in online schooling and them really not having that connection they used to with their friends, like, what is one way that parents can feed their kids' socialization needs?
Here's the thing that I want parents, because I think parents feel really worried about this time, and they feel really frustrated, and they feel like their kids are going to miss a lot of social development. And I understand that concern, because it is different over screens. It's different when you don't have that face-to-face interaction. And I do think that parents are going to have to be really creative in using their family system for that. I also know of families that have aligned with other families that are also social distancing and haven't left their homes, and that they've created like friendship pods. So that's something to think about too, where you know this group of, you know, these parents have not left their house, their kids haven't left the house, and you know they've been quarantining. You know, that's an option for some parents. Another something to think about is, you know, all children that we're talking about right now have grown up with screens, mm-hmm. right? So it's not like some, I don't know, there's a few of us left. I'm really old, so I remember life without screens. Maybe you guys don't, but
I do.
most kids have grown up. It's part of their norm. So my experience has been that a lot of times parents are more concerned about it than the kids are. I had to shift from an in-office setting to telehealth overnight, and I work primarily with tweens and teens. I thought, oh, how is this going to work? You know, I really like the interaction that we have and kind of what happens when you're in a live setting with a teenager. And I didn't know how this was going to work, this setting, but what I found is they're so comfortable in this setting. I'm actually getting a lot further in counseling with some kids, and they're being a lot more honest and a lot more direct because they feel more comfortable in this setting. This is how they communicate every day with their friends. This is how they communicate on their video games and with other kids, and this is their language. So actually our assumption that they're somehow missing out is maybe not accurate.
That's a very interesting way to look at it, because I could say, like, I've seen that too, even with my son watching his second grade Zoom calls. At first, he was very hesitant to speak up, but now he's like, hey, how are you? And my daughter, every lunchtime, she's on Facebook Messenger Kids with like two of her friends, and they're chatting downstairs. And so that's a great way to look at it, that they're much more comfortable on it than we give them credit for.
No, I will say the younger ones, though, you know, your you know, toddlers and early learners that are learning language and learning social cues, I think we're going to start to see what that might look like. I think it is going to impact their development. I'm not quite sure how, because we haven't had enough time to understand that. But that's why I think it's super important for toddlers, especially, or preschoolers, to be able, in some ways, I think it's good for them to be able to see facial expressions in this way versus having a mask on.
Yeah. Right.
Because you can't read social cues. You can't read the nonverbal communication in the same way. So I do think that that's going to be an interesting part of this. I made the decision to close my office because I didn't want to be like this all day with kids. I want them to be able to see my facial expressions. And I felt like this was a better way to manage that. I think I've been pleasantly surprised at how kids just adapt. As long as we adapt as the parents, when mama's okay, everyone's okay. And that is the absolute truth. So as long as we learn how to adapt and and understand that it's okay. Our kids are resilient and they are like water. They will do whatever whatever our cues are is what they bounce off of. But really they're so much more adaptable than we are.
Yeah. It's like we say it, no guilt, mom. The best mom is a happy mom. So take care of you. So I've loved these insights that you've had into kids and socialization and everything that we can do as parents to support them. And you have a book coming out, which I'm super excited about. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The book is called The Bravo Effect, Strategies for Parenting Extreme Teens. And it really kind of was born out of a lot of the things that I've developed in my private practice and working with families. You know, I focus on extreme behavior because that's typically what brings people into my doors. So a lot of the challenges that parents have with teenagers and tweens come from that family system and that relationship. So I provide a scaffolding using the acronym of my last name,
I love that.
Which is behavior, relationships, attitudes, values, and opportunities. And using those five domains, parents can begin to evaluate where they are at with their child. But at the core of all of that, again, is connection and emotional support. Kids who feel emotionally connected and supported make much different decisions in their lives than kids who do not.
Definitely. That.
So a lot of the book is about how to connect and how to make that a sustainable relationship, even when there's been trauma, even when there's things they have to heal from, in spite of it or because of it.
That's a great takeaway for parents. Just remember connection and emotional support. And I feel like the rest will be okay. It'll be okay. Well, thank you so, so much for joining us and answering our questions. Like, it's been such a pleasure and we've loved having you.
Thank you for asking me. This was a fun topic.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you soon.
Wow. That was a really, I feel like it was a really insightful interview.
I feel the same way. It was a lot of permission to just do your best, be your best, and not worry about screwing up your kid.
Yes. Like, you're enough. You're doing enough. Embrace the messiness, right. Like we said at the beginning.
And I liked her. She had some really great tangible advice in there. I liked the whole finding, like, your family pod. Mm-hmm. That's something that my family has utilized a little bit for the kids. And I noticed that it really did help their spirits when we were able to start doing that.
It helps. Mm-hmm. It helps a lot. Like, our kids are all together downstairs right now while we record this podcast. And they're working. And it's honestly easier having your kids here and working with them than it was just them by themselves.
And it's funny when you say working with them, because
they're literally just by each other.
Yeah. Just having that other person right there really helps their emotional well-being and their feeling of, I feel like, a little bit of their normalcy for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, you help my emotional well-being. Because you just started here and I've been working by myself for 6 years. And like, as soon as you started, I became super productive, girl.
I know. Like, I was sitting around like, wow, she's getting a lot done.
I'm like, but I'm usually not that way.
But I had to work remotely a lot in my previous job because it was during the pandemic, as soon as everything opened up or as soon as everything went down, I guess, however you want to say it. Same thing. Like, when I would notice that the weeks that I was working from home with nobody around, got a little squirrely.
It's hard to stay focused. I find that my best companions are The Real Housewives on Bravo. And like Million Dollar Listing. I was like really caught up on The Real Housewives. I'd have it on while I was working.
I did a lot of like listening to NPR and my audiobooks. That's what I found worked.
I can't concentrate when I listen to like an audiobook or a podcast or something when I'm working.
Well, don't ask me to tell you everything that was said, but I can get the gist of it. Like there were times I had to like pause it and then listen to something else because I wanted to come back and totally focus, but it just depended upon the task I was doing. So
It's interesting how that works, because my husband listens to podcasts while he works and I'm like, how do you do that? Like, I can't.
Your work is very creative and I can see how the more that's very hard. Like, if I'm trying to figure out what to say and I'm listening to somebody else say something, I'm going to start typing what they're saying.
It's like keeping two voices in your head at the same time, I guess.
Right. That's, and like, and the work I was doing the other job, it wasn't creative work. So it was much more of just spreadsheets. You have to work through that. So.
It's like all that.
Yeah. But anyway.
Anyway.
So I love, yes.
Tangent.
Tangible solutions, suggestions.
Yes.
Support.
Yes.
Like, I want to have her be my therapist.
It
was very warm and biting, mm-hmm. and it was so inspirational to hearing where she started from.
Yes.
And what inspired her.
Yeah.
To become what she has become in life. So.
I agree. She's a great person and hopefully a frequent guest of the podcast, because I already want her back and I want to bring her and I want to ask all the questions. And if you have questions right now for Dr. Bravo, just email us at hello@noguiltmom.com and tell us who else you want to see on the podcast. And
yes.
we will work our darndest to try to convince them to come on.
Yes. Yes. We love that feedback.
Yes. So if you haven't already, you can see the show notes at noguiltmom.com/episode002. And you can also grab our No Guilt Mom mindset, which is all those things we talked about in episode 1. But it's pretty and you could hang it somewhere. You see it all the time.
So when you need that extra moment of like, am I doing this right? What am I supposed to do?
You can look at it
and be like, I am allowed to be thinking this. I am allowed to be working this way. And this is my growth mindset, is my mom mindset.
Yes, exactly. So go grab those. And until next time, the best mom's a happy mom. So take care of you. And we'll see you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.